Chapter 8. A Union for All Eternity. Arthur and Alice decided to get married and live together, but they didn't want to have an ordinary wedding with drunken relatives and other common things. They decided to undergo an ancient pagan ritual that would cement their union on a subtle level. When they learned that Mira could perform such a ritual, they went to her. But before that, they attended one of Naya's classes, inviting their close friends from the school. When they entered the hall where Naya was teaching, they saw that the students were performing some skits, like in a theater. Some were playing a family quarrel, others a business making a contract, and others a salesman and cranky customers. "What's going on?" Arthur asked Nye with some surprise. "It's an ancient spiritual practice of the Sampo system, based on the art of Sansa control," the woman began to explain. "According to the teachings of Sampo, before doing something difficult, a person should play it out in the Sands Theater. Do you remember how ancient people before hunting killed an animal drawn on the sand? With this, they created a road in the subtle plane to their goal. That is, in the language of shamans, they sharpened the road in the body of Sir. And so it is here. Practicing the situation in the performance, they learn how to play a role in life as effectively as possible. They look at what they lack. And, above all, they pay attention to the change of energy. For each role has its own energy. A leader needs to have more power than someone who is being led. And one must know how to create this power. As it is said, a lion among sheep, a sheep among lions. The one who is energetically stronger becomes a leader." "Is it bad to be a wingman?" listening carefully to Naya's explanation. "Not at all. An apprentice, a subordinate, and any intelligent woman." Naya smiled enigmatically and looked at Alice. "Must learn to be led if she is with a worthy man, or to pretend that she is a wing woman, controlling with the help of cunning. This is another principle of the Sampo system, and we study it in our theater too." "It's very interesting," Alice responded enthusiastically, keeping her eyes fixed on Tudor. "There are two of you now," Naya continued. "And that means that your common energy is polarized into yin-yang. But it doesn't mean that you, Alice, should always be yin. If Arthur feels bad and needs your help, you will have to become yang. And when you have a child, you will polarize into sattva, rajas, and tamas. That is, someone will be intelligent, someone will be active, and someone will be passive. When your child outwits you, they will be sattva, i.e. intelligent in this situation." "What if we have two children?" Arthur asked with a smile, casting a loving glance at Alice. "Then you would polarize into the four elements. No matter how many people there are in a team, they polarize into opposites that complement each other. And you have to be able to adjust your energy to take the right role and harmonize the situation in the team." "Oh, how interesting," Alice marveled, anticipating the upcoming lesson. "We will learn from you," Arthur added eagerly as they joined in the practice of Sands Theater. Soon after Naya's classes, Arthur and Alice met Mira, a tall, russet-haired young woman with a tanned face, dressed in a light white dress down to her ankles, which was tied at the waist with a wide belt with fringe and embroidered patterns. "Now we must get ready for the ritual. There is such an ancient megalith," Mira said in a sonorous voice. "It is a stone in which two seats are hollowed out. Lovers sit on them and greet the dawn. And when the sun appears from behind the mountain and illuminates them with its radiance, a blessing descends upon them. The union of such people will be unusually successful and happy. In general, it is very important to meet the first rays of the sun and moon when it rises at night. It is the same when you greet a friend and they transfer their energy to you. That's why the ancients always greeted the sun in the morning. But now, people either sleep at dawn or they are greeted by the zombie TV, irradiating them with negativity in the morning. That is why humans, having so much, have lost happiness." Before dawn, Arthur, Alice, and their friends, as well as Naya, rode on horseback to the place of power. The newlyweds were dressed in the robes of ancient priests, as were their attendants. they rode through a beautiful oak forest until they came upon a huge, mossy, dark green stone. The travelers approached it in awestruck silence, feeling some powerful and mysterious force emanating from it. They walked around it three times, bowing to it. "This megalith," Mira began to explain, "is the same age as the dolmens. The priests used to perform their great mysteries on it, and now it will help you." Arthur and Alice sat down on the seats of the stone and immediately felt the power of this place. The lovers plunged into some ancient, unearthly state, as if they had been transported to millennia ago, and before them, like a fog, floated the events of those old years, and they heard the noise and voices of people who lived in those times. But now, everything was silent. Mira performed the ritual, and Arthur and Alice, holding hands, waited for the sun. When the first morning rays appeared from behind the mountain, the newlyweds raised their free hands in greeting, stretching them forward and slightly upward, palms downward. They chanted the mantra, "Hurai Mangalam," and then the rays of the sun descended on the young ones. At the same moment, they felt a powerful burst of energy, felt that they had become one being from particles of shimmering light. The people around them were surprised to notice the figure eights of light revolving around them. The descent of the power was so powerful that the minds of all present fell into silence. But after a few minutes, they came to their senses and began to cheer, congratulating the nuptials. On the center part of the stone where the altar had been placed, the illuminated gifts were laid, and during the festivities around the fire, each one took their gift and presented it to Alice and Arthur with good wishes. Unlike an ordinary wedding, no one was drunk. Everyone was in an elevated and solemn state of mind. "You see," said Mira, "people can have fun without vodka as joyfully as children do. Only a false personality with its roles prevents them from being free, makes them afraid of each other. One should be in one's own essence, not be a slave to the roles imposed by a sick society." "Yes, friends, I feel so light and happy," Alice said with a bright smile. "I didn't want to get married thinking about a drunken wedding that made me sick. I thought, why on such a solemn day should everyone lose their human form, explaining to themselves that they couldn't have fun without it? Is it really necessary to become an animal to celebrate?" "That's right," said Arthur, "because we're creating a program, a plan for all our life. And what kind of program is that if all the guests are drunk and out of control? Fighting, lying on top of each other, and then everyone is vomiting? That's why people in marriage have become so unhappy. That's why the number of divorces is growing." At the feast, everyone ate light, specially prepared raw food. Only Ruslan didn't touch the food at all.
"Hey, what's the matter with you?" Arthur asked.
"I'm preparing to die," he replied seriously.
"How to die?"
Arthur was frightened for his friend.
"Oh, really? You're kidding, right?"
"Yes, to die," Ruslan confirmed without a smile. "I wanted to take you with me, but you're getting married."
Why die? Why?"
people around them began to ask when they heard the talk of the two friends.
"You know," Ruslan began to explain, "there are dolmens nearby. They were special tombs where every initiate went through the ritual of dying. That is, separating themselves from everything alien, imposed by society and upbringing. This ancient ritual helps to find your essence and yourself outside of all these lies that were imposed on me. That I am Russian, son, grandson, brother, brother-in-law, matchmaker, student, friend, enemy. All these are just my roles, not myself. I lost myself among these roles and external impressions, images, advertising, movies, books, other people's views, habits, reactions."
"Interesting,"
said Arthur, and added, looking at his friend carefully,
"I want to go with you too."
But then he looked back at Alice, who was standing nearby, and said,
"But perhaps next time."
Ruslan nodded understandingly.
"Why don't you eat?"
Arthur asked again.
I've been fasting for about 40 days now to cleanse myself before the practice. Otherwise, it won't be deep enough. So, I invite you on a wedding trip. Ruslan's lips finally touched a mischievous smile. You can walk me to the dolmen. The friends began to prepare themselves, eager to see the dolmen and what Ruslan would do there. Naya, who had suggested this spiritual practice to him, also went with them. I'll be on duty at the dolmen while Ruslan is dying, to meet him from the other side of the world, Naya joked. They got into the jeep and drove along a picturesque mountain road. When they reached the river, they started to cross it, but the stream was too turbulent and literally knocked them off their feet. They had to take sticks and lean on the bottom of the river to hold on under the rushing water. After crossing the river, the friends began to climb uphill. Ruslan was weakened from hunger, and every now and then he stopped to rest. There were mighty, moss-covered trees, shrubs blooming, birds flying in the sky chirping. They reached a huge oak tree. Standing around it and taking their hands, the friends could not put their arms around it. Nearby lay two more such giants. And now, on the top of the mountain, the travelers saw several dolmens, and in the distance they could see the snow-covered peaks of the mountains. This is the place of power, Naya said solemnly, stretching her arms out to the sides and breathing in the fresh, invigorating air. This is where the ancient priests conducted their rituals. Gurdjieff had been here once when he was traveling from Maikop to Tiflis. The place radiated wonderful power and peace. Ruslan received Naya's last instructions, said goodbye to his friends, and went inside the dolmen. He was given some hay to make a bed for himself. A stone plug, found nearby, was inserted into the hole, and all the cracks were covered with earth to keep the light out. Ruslan lay down, relaxed, and felt a special energy coming from the ground. He began to tune into death and read the Atlantean prayer. I'm born here in the prison of the body. I'm entangled in the web of desire. I'm bound by the lies of men. I cry out to you, O heaven. My thoughts are the breath of a fish. The sound of a cat's footsteps are my accomplishments. You are the light that cannot be seen by the blind. I'm made for suffering. I'm here, fitted for slavery. I'm the abode of fruitless dreams. I cry out to you, O eternity. My life is like a dream. My life is as if I were insane. My life of intoxication lasts. How do I come to you, O God? My purpose is like the roots of a mountain. My meaning is like the saliva of a bird. Thou art the voice of truth that the deaf cannot hear. You are the bliss for which there is no heart. How shall I know you, Great One? Give me sight to see you. Give me ears to hear you. Give me a heart for grace, that I may become like thee. Give me help to break the bonds. Give me strength to serve you, God. Give me death to disappear, to dissolve in you, One. It is not known how much time passed, but at one moment Ruslan clearly sensed that he was not alone here. Gradually, the room began to light up with a dim glow, and he noticed that there were some dwarfs sitting in the four corners. Who are you? Ruslan asked, a little frightened. We are the priests of the dolmens. We were the ones who built them thousands of years ago and performed our rituals in them, they answered in a chorus with bizarre voices. Why are you still alive so long? Ruslan marveled. Our bodies are long dead, and you are lying on our bones, was the answer. But we are here in thin bodies. And what did you come here for? The boy asked again. We have come to help you, for you have repeated our prayer, which the Atlanteans gave us. If you understand its meaning, the truth will be revealed to you. Ruslan was just about to ask something when the dwarf put his finger to his mouth and spoke softly. Now you will see the ancient ritual of Sampo. It will help you to separate your essence from your personality. It will help you to make your personality begin to die, and you to resurrect. The dwarf waved his hand, and he and Ruslan found themselves outside the dolmen on top of the mountain. It was undoubtedly the same mountain, but everything was different. The dolmens were new. There were more of them. The trees along the edges of the clearing were growing differently, and the time of year was different. Autumn. The leaves were all yellow, and many of them had fallen off.
"What is it?" Ruslan asked curiously.
"We've been transported back thousands of years, when our civilization lived here," the dwarf explained readily. Then, 12 more masked dwarfs appeared in the clearing, and another sat on a dais and watched the others. At first, the dwarfs lined up in a triangle, and then they danced a bizarre ancient dance, spinning around each other and exchanging masks to the unusual music. Ruslan managed to see the mask of a vulture, a deer, a dog, a fox, a lion, a rooster, a jackal, a pig, a goat, a fish, a horse, and a crow, which were all different colors.
"What does this mean?" he asked his guide.
"These are your 12 major roles you play in life. They are all within you. But when you find yourself in a certain group, in a certain situation, you play one of them, and, unfortunately, you can't help but play it. Every situation, every collective evokes one of the roles in you, and other people in that collective play opposite roles. But you do all this unconsciously, like puppets, and you are slaves to these roles. Cosmic influences control society, which controls the collective, and the collective forces the individual to play the desired role."
"How do you get free of it?" Ruslan asked.
"Do you see the priest sitting there, watching everything?" The dwarf pointed to the figure of a sage clad in a long robe. "You must learn to observe your roles so that you will be outside of them. You are such an observer, but you have forgotten it."
Ruslan was silent, pondering over his companion's words, while the dwarfs again stood in a triangle in a clear order.
"What does this triangle mean?"
decided to clarify the guy.
"These are the three main forces: active, passive, and neutralizing. It is their combination that creates these 12 archetypes, roles," explained the priest. "Any role depends on the ratio of your energy to the energy of the collective."
Ruslan wanted to ask something else, but the priest put his finger to his lips.
"Shh, that knowledge will come to you later, but for now, it's time to die."
He waved his hand, and Ruslan found himself back on the straw bedding inside the dolmen. He could not tell whether he was asleep or awake, whether he was alive or dead. Thoughts and images that he had thought were his own were rushing around him. But now he saw where each thought, each image, each impression, reaction, habit had come from. All this had once come to him from the outside, from parents, friends, educators, from books, from the TV screen. Often, the first impressions became the basis for evaluating the subsequent ones. He considered the oldest and most often repeated ones to be himself.
"Who am I?"
he began to wonder, but felt only emptiness inside him.
"Where am I? Where am I?"
he questioned, but he was nowhere to be found.
"I don't exist," he realized.
"I'm dead. I don't exist,"
he shouted loudly and immediately came out of this state. His body was still lying on the hay in the darkness of the dolmen.
"Let me out of here,"
he shouted fearfully, crawling in the darkness, looking for a way out.
"I want to get out. I want to get out."
He was thrashing about. But at last, Ruslan found the stone plug and pushed it out. Blinding daylight immediately hit him in the eyes. He looked around and saw the familiar clearing, the tent, Naya, but it was all alien, unreal. He crawled out of his confinement and crawled on all fours across the grass.
"What are you doing?"
Naya called out to him. He looked at her in surprise, as if seeing her for the first time.
I don't know," he mumbled as he continued doing something.
"Let's go to the tent," Naya said patiently, helping Ruslan up off the ground and examining him.
"Look at you. You've got gray hair."
She took the guy by the hand,
took him like a child to the tent, and laid him on the sleeping bag, covering him with a woolen blanket. Soon you'll remember everything, and everything will be all right. She lulled him as if he were an innocent child. Ruslan relaxed, lay down, and fell into a deep infant's sleep. When Ruslan woke up in the morning, he couldn't come to his senses for a long time. Naya suggested that he come out of his fast, but he didn't feel like eating. He was lost and did not know how to live.
"Who am I?" he asked Naya. "I realize that nothing is mine, that everything is taken from somewhere else. Thoughts, feelings, habits. How to live now? And why? Who will live?" he asked. "It turns out that this alien thing lives in me. Or I live in other people's things. Where am I?" he wondered.
"You didn't notice the most important thing," Naya said softly. "Who was looking at these alien thoughts, suggestive reactions, borrowed habits?" Ruslan thought deeply. "If you hadn't been there, no one would have seen it."
"Yes."
Ruslan was surprised.
"So who am I? The one who sees it?" he said thoughtfully.
"What about it? You're just a seeing witness of it all," Naya confirmed. "Try to be in that state more often, when you see and understand everything. Now, let's go for a walk. You need to get moving to regain your senses." They went down to the river, and Naya nodded in the direction of the water and suggested, "Do you see a nice water hole? Watch how the river swirls the water in it. It's not deep here. Swim. Swirl around in the current. It will help you come to your senses." Ruslan began to swim with pleasure, spinning in the whirlpool as if in a merry-go-round, and began to rejoice like a child. And then he lay on the shore and looked at the snow-white clouds floating across the sky, looking like huge shaggy animals. There was an ancient box tree growing all around him, all wrapped in a clean beard of green moss. Suddenly, there was the rumble of an engine on the other bank, and then there were long signals. Ruslan looked up and saw that it was Arthur and Alice, coming in a jeep to get them. "We have to go," Naya said with a bright smile, and they went up the mountain to get their tent and things.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org.